We're with As You Wish Talk Radio. We're broadcasting from beautiful Trout Lake, Washington, one of the internationally known hotspots for UFOs and paranormal activity. We've got quite a show tonight. I want to get right into it so we don't waste any time at all. We've got Steve Marino with PSI Applications, which is a very well-known organization for investigating UFO activity, crop circles, other paranormal activity. And they take a very serious approach, a very analytical approach to these events. And I know so many places where he's gone, you know, he doesn't have any problem in being straight up with people if they're not straight up people, you know. So he's been doing some major investigation here up in Trout Lake, Washington, concerning the ongoing activity here. So without any further waiting, we'd like to bring Steve Marino on. Are you on, Steve?
I sure am. Thank you, James, for having me on.
Oh, great. What exactly is PSI Applications?
Well, PSI Applications is a nonprofit foundation that was formed some 20 years ago after my own personal NDE. Basically, it was formed to create a midway organization that walks the fence line between science and academia and what would be referred to as the psychic or experiencer community, and with paranormal events occurring that are of a beneficial nature. So the whole concept of PSI Applications is basically PSI is a designated term used in the scientific exploration of the paranormal as the energy that may be operating behind the phenomena. And Applications basically states, let's utilize this energy that could be of benefit while we're exploring it scientifically for things like a gifted psychics database for healing or finding lost people and that sort of thing, or other sorts of things, so to where we can accumulate data and study the phenomenon while we're applying what we know about PSI. So, prior to my near-death experience and an accident I had, I was more or less an out-of-control psychic experiencer myself, and unlike you and most other people, instead of becoming more spiritually enlightened after my NDE, I actually became like a regular person, and I didn't have these paranormal experiences anymore. But in the process of my accident, I kind of made a deal with the source that if I could walk away from this soul auto wreck without being crippled, I would form this organization, not really even knowing what PSI meant or anything. So it's been 20 years now, and I've served real well as being a person who's of both natures, having known what it is to be a contactee or an experiencer, and also now working as an investigator and working with people that are well-known in the scientific community who have degrees and such. Even though I don't, I work as a journalistic kind of investigator, and as a founder and director, I help to form scientific teams when needed and, move things forward in a scientific fashion but with an open mind.
Yeah, that's very important. What I've seen in my own experience is that unless you're awake or have some degree of spirituality, you'll never understand this enigma, the UFO enigma, because there's so many levels to it.
That's very true. It's unfortunate, but here it seems in the West, unlike the East, there seems to be a plausible deniability against any potential reality of there being some sort of substance behind a spiritual reality, I don't know, that's a whole other story, but nonetheless, there has been a lot of scientific exploration of the paranormal and psychic phenomenon back in time. A lot of it has gone undercover, I think, but a lot of people have lost track of how much really true investigative work that was done in the field that documented the reality of PSI, and so we're just trying to bring all that forward and explore and give an outlet for contactees and experiencers that have very real things happening to see what we can discover.
Yeah, what I've seen, what I've experienced is the all of that, like remote viewing and a lot of these other PSI applications that are going on, including the UFO experience. The government's usually saying, this is not real, go back to your everyday job, forget about it, we've got everything under control, it's all an illusion. And meanwhile, they're behind the scenes back engineering these things and doing their own remote viewing, and they have a huge funding program behind all this and just billions of dollars, but their stance is like everything is is, you know, we've got everything under control. Don't worry about it. Just, you know, keep paying your taxes, making that paycheck, you know, buy
that
SUV.
Yeah, it's really, it's unfortunate. It seems like there's just a strange fear that, you know, the controlling powers that be within governments are afraid that if people discover their spirituality or the real powers they may have within inside themselves, that, you know, even with the churches of the world, even though religion is a good thing, there's some aspects of religion that seems to want to control the knowledge for people to know what really lies within them, you know, as you've often stated, you know.
Knowledge is power, and you don't really want to empower the individual because then you can't control them.
Yeah, but, you know, I always look at the, I think, you know, in exploring metaphysics, there's a thing called the paradox, and on the flip side of the coin, walking the middle fence line within applications, it's interesting because we try not to see anything from a negative, but I take every negative and see it as a positive, and if we can develop ways of looking at, you know, these discoveries and getting this information out as a positive, that would support the government, you know, somehow, you know.
But well, they're backpedaling right now. They know, I mean, everybody's pretty much awake to what's going on, and even
exactly.
The Times, CNN polls,
yeah.
Say that there is a government cover-up. I don't know what the last one was, but I think it was over 80%. But,
right.
You know, everybody, the cover-up's over, basically, you know, and so why not just come clean? It's everybody knows.
That's right, exactly. You know, and then the only thing you have left in is the old adage of academia, per se, as always within its realm of time, adhering to the constraints as the paradigm of that current time, you know, and what we have to remember in academia is that there are new things to discover always within the universe, forever expanding. We'll never know everything. And as long as we can realize that, then maybe we can discover things to a point and then look beyond that for new discoveries, you know?
I like that. There's a theory I heard. This one guy told me why new information never gets going. It's because the professor wrote the book and he doesn't want to rewrite the book, and they keep selling those books over and over and over again. So
right.
When the new knowledge comes in, they go, oh no, I'm not going to edit this book or add anything else to it. This is the way we're going to do it. And it's all recycled ignorance, unfortunately. You know,
it's just unfortunate that humanity can't learn from its own lessons of the past. I mean, look how many times, people were chastised and great discoveries were held back, but later generations they became what we use every day now, you know, and
exactly.
So what makes us think that now we can have everything, you know? We don't, you know, so.
Yeah, it's kind of sad because the evolution of humanity is greatly stunted. I wanted to go into the investigation up here at Mount Adams,
sure.
With all the UFO activity, and there's a long history which you made me aware of. I didn't realize there was such a history of UFO activity because I was actually building a retreat center, more of a spiritual center, when I had the contacts, and I'd love to get into that. Did you want to move into that area?
Sure, that sounds great.
Okay, great.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, the thing that fascinated me the most, and I mean really still does with your case file, is how your NDE, your near-death experience, is so dynamic. It stands in a rare 1% of all documented cases where you crossed over a border or a crossing that most typically in NDE documented experiences, people will go up to that crossing and come back. But you apparently went right over that, right through the tunnel, over this border, and into which been referred to as the light of the source, and it forever changed your life. I mean, when you decided that you wanted to come back and share this with everybody, and prior to that, I guess you were quite the materialistic person with a real estate company and fast cars and had no interest in any of this, but and the source relates to you, so be it, and you wash back up on the shore from your surfing accident where you
uh-huh.
drowned. And, you know, what fascinates me is the connection that you have with this UFO enigma up in Washington, because you were guided up there under a manner of, you know, forming this institute to help people, you know, become one with the earth and develop themselves spirituality, not knowing anything about the UFO phenomenon that was prior up there. And then all of a sudden this UFO phenomenon begins to manifest over your ranch, as when I became involved in your case file and came up and met you that time, because there was physical evidence of a actual physical contact you had that was intriguing. And as time went on, you started doing a great job of documenting it with the Sony NICAM, and this thing began to exponentially, you know, manifest in an increasing manner. And as we began to really look into this case file and develop a history of the region, we found out that this UFO phenomenon is a hotspot that was, clarified in that area for quite some time, going all the way back into the 60s, and was documented by one of the greatest ufologists in the world, who was actually a government scientist, J. Allen Hynek. And this was intriguing because the one characteristic that was different in this UFO phenomenon activity up there with your case was that it showed a predisposition to wanting to be documented, whereas they even documented in the scientific reports over a three-year study they did back in, I think it was 84 or something, Dr. Ackers did it for J. Allen Hynek, that the phenomenon seemed to avoid them knowingly. It seemed to be beyond a reason of chance the way it would all of a sudden leave when it knew that they were coming with their equipment to try and document it, when it was reported by people who were experiencing it in the Yakima Reservation, which as a bird flies is like right within the same region as your ranch right on the other side of the
mountain. Yeah, we're looking right at it. Yeah. I mean, we're looking right, the whole right side of the mountain is the reservation.
Right.
So we're looking right at the reservation.
So here this manifestation of the UFO phenomenon, it begins to occur it's been incredible, all the footage and all the things that have happened up at your ranch. With your connection, which was quite, good intending and benevolent, it lends a predisposition of benevolence to the phenomenon. So we've got all the best things going on here, And so that's what has really intrigued me and involved me to have an ongoing documentation of your case. And I'm hoping that maybe we can get some live documentation going on where we can really establish this phenomenon once and for all as truly existing,
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that. I found out from some of the elders here, I was listening to their stories that go way back, and I think you found some, too, concerning contacts that went back probably hundreds of years.
Yep, that's true. And Greg Long, I think, refers to it as the Yakima UFO microcosm. I think that most all of them have been basically benevolent in nature, although there have been a lot of related experiences that were seem more intended to scare people away from finding base locations and that sort of thing, but nothing that ever manifested in a violent or abduction or harmful manner,
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in many cases, there was actually healing reported or beneficial things,
That's what the legends say. The legend said that when one of the people within the nation or whatever were, had a broken leg or they were really sick or ill, they would take them up to this certain location, and I guess something would open up a door or something, and these beings would come out and pick the person up and take them inside, and then they would get a message, or I guess the elders are very spiritual and they do a lot of meditation ceremony there, so they would get a telepathic message to come back and pick them up, and they would go back up the mountain, and sure enough, the kid or whoever that was there would be standing there just totally healed, within a day or two.
Yeah, that's amazing. It really is. Yeah, there's just there's so much that can be done up there. It's really incredible. And the spectrum of phenomenon that occurs up there at your ranch is really beyond the UFO enigma. I mean, there have been things that have happened up there that I don't want to go into it unless you bring it up. But it's just a whole wide spectrum. I think there's also some very beneficial discoveries here that could be of an energy nature for plasma physicists and that sort of thing. So.
Oh yeah, with the orbs and the other energies that are
right
being seen up here, it's amazing up here. This is like a paranormal wonderland. If you take a camera in the evening and just shoot flashes out across the field there, you'll find all these things show up on your film that you can't explain. There's no explanation for them. There's a lot of people say, oh, these are dust particles or this is water vapor. It'll be bone dry out there, or we'll take them indoors and these things are appearing and they actually have faces on the inside of them. I have no doubt. We have them flying through trees, casting shadows where the tree branch will cast a shadow on it, 100 feet away. So there's the none of these other things add up. You can, make dust particles and take a picture with a big flash on it, and they do make kind of an orb, but nothing like what we're experiencing here and the energies that go along with it.
That's right. And what we hope to do for you is to, develop protocols, which we're working with some scientists that are helping to develop those for us, that will actually substantiate a scientific significance and the orb phenomenon up there as not being indicative of, you know, particulate matter reflecting light and that sort of thing. It'll be very easy to do, actually, and it's just a matter of running the numbers of trials and entering them into a database, you know.
Oh, we have groups of people that come up here and do oming and sit in a circle and do songs and things of that nature, and it's amazing because we'll take before and after pictures and there's nothing there.
Right.
Three or four pictures, there's nothing there, and then they'll start toning or doing different things. You know, we're very eclectic here, so we just kind of let people do their thing. And as long as it's not, you know, human or animal sacrifice or something of that nature, you know, which I've been accused of. But, you know, we keep the negative stuff out. But, you know, no drugs, too. We're very, you know, very clean up here. But
right. You know, the most incredible thing, I think, you know, beyond the UFO phenomenon that I've ever seen up there was when you were doing those types of experiments where people would, you know, kind of pray or manifest this loving energy. And then they wouldn't, and the pictures before and after was where there was a picture of a diva or a fairy image that, when enlarged, had incredible detail in it of, I mean, almost like this little beanie on it and this, like, wand handheld device and the wings in motion. I mean, I'm still flabbergasted by that because when you enlarge it or enhance it, if it was a rendering glitch, it would over-pixelize instead of the details coming out more, you know. And I'm thinking that it might be possible to develop a video process, running it through a computer with a program, where we would be able to image these things in real time instead of using digital still imagery, to where you could see it through the computer, but you may not see it visually with the eye, both orbs coming in and these entities that they may be, you know, which would be an incredible thing. I mean, that would really blow the scientific community away.
Totally, yeah, all we need is the equipment, basically. We've been talking a lot about one of the projects is putting in a webcam here, and you know, a good webcam with the right filters and a few other things, which is what we're working on now, would do the trick.
Yes, sir, it sure would. And we're hoping, I think, like we were talking about, is setting up some other monitoring apparatus, such as an ion counter for ion content in the air, other elements that may exist, so we can develop databases that will show patterns that may exist as this phenomenon manifests, you know. And so there'll be a collection of data here. And, yeah, I'm really, you know, positive about what will happen if we're able to achieve that eventually here, because I think even when you have your shows, people may be able to actually view the phenomenon occurring right in tandem with what you may have been, you know, be saying. That's how it's occurred, you know.
Yeah, we've had cameras rolling and locations of ships with pre-knowledge, and the ships did appear right on cue, which is amazing. And one of the most amazing videos that we got up here, I guess, was taken by you with that huge mothership in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's a really incredible piece of footage, because it's kind of embarrassing, too, at the same time, because right in the footage you can hear us, you know, I'm disqualifying as just a low-orbiting, undulating star from the atmosphere being so low. And yet, you know, the next night we're standing out there at the same time, looking in the same proximity. There's no star or no planet there. Mm-hmm. Right away it cued us. And when we went to look at it and did still frames, here's this incredible ship with all this detail. If we had only known the night before, we could have used some C5 protocols and flashed the spot beam at it. No telling what would have happened, but
I remember I kept looking at it. I go, I don't remember that being there. It just didn't feel right.
Yes,
you know,
it did. That
there's
yeah.
Something there, because I go out all the time and look at the sky.
You know, but I don't think that was too far away from us, really. It seemed like it was, like, within 5 miles, even, you know. I believe it was actually monitoring us. Anyhow, we have new protocols now that will avoid us making such a mistake in the future. So.
Yeah, we need to get a whole start. We had David Farnsworth out here, and you got to meet him. He's quite a character, but he's unsurpassed in monitoring equipment, and he had three antennas set up here with all these oscilloscopes and everything, and he could go below the baseline, and he was actually monitoring these ships traveling, and they were flying over us, they were flying under us, they were they were all over the place. And it was amazing, which shows there's a huge underground facility. But tracking, you know, he could track these ships. And I'm not exactly sure how his equipment worked, but you could watch them on the oscilloscope. And you could see these ships just cruising right along.
Yeah, I'd really like to try and hook up with them and get that data recorded more of a, you know, exactly what the nature of it was. But didn't he also pilot a plane over the mountain during the evening when the activity was occurring?
Oh, he did. It was funny. We were on the cell phone and he was calling us from the plane and he was trying to catch this UFO that was up there flying around. It was pretty hilarious.
Wow.
But we were getting a blow-by-blow description of what, you know, and you could hear the plane. It was pretty funny. You could hear the plane engine going on the cell phone, and he's going, it's right in front of us, right? And he's getting all excited. It's right in front of us. We're banking, you know. And I guess the pilot was really leery about, he kind of wanted to turn around and get the hell out of there, you know.
Right, right.
So, and Dave's going, no, right there, turn, bank, you know. And he's trying to get him to fly right towards it.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, though, I think, you know, that I know there for a fact that there is a UFO phenomenon that is involved with this plasmoid spherical formations that manifest up there. But I think if there's a spectrum of phenomena that occurs up there, some of it may be naturally occurring also as just simple spheroid plasmas that will actually respond to your thought input. But the way that they may go off and fade off eventually, and some of them with the color changes and stuff, are indicative of, you know, some things that scientists have been looking for many years but only see rarely once in a while, which is plasma spheroids that form under unusual conditions. But I think that it's very probable and probably is more the case that there are advanced intelligences that are utilizing this as a technology for both transport, probe utilization, and physical manifestation as well. So you have a whole spectrum of phenomena that's occurring in this area up there, which may be connected to the ring of fire element that exists there, you know, some of the characteristics geologically that exist within that area, you know.
There's definitely a vortex here, and the veils between worlds are very thin, and they probably utilize that vortex to step into this dimension and use whatever technologies to either communicate or observe or whatever else they're doing.
Yeah, you know, and isn't I think the strip of area there that exists between Hood River and Mount Adams is like one of the most frequented areas for Bigfoot sightings in the entire world. And I guess down there at the Logs restaurant or whatever it is, they have a logbook of people that aren't even interested in any of this stuff that have all recorded their sightings with Bigfoot up in the area.
Oh, yeah, the American Academy of Science or something like that. I can't remember the name. It was a big scientific organization came up, and they took reports from so many different people. And the reports, the details were almost all identical. It was amazing, and they're very thorough. They would say, you know, do you wear glasses? You know, are you on medication? Are you? And they would ask you all these real tough questions. Were you under stress when this happened? You know, or did you believe in this beforehand? Almost all of them said no, you know, no. And it was amazing, but they gave details. And myself, I mean, I don't want to go into it, but I've seen Bigfoot myself, and I have no doubt whatsoever it exists because I was 50 feet away from one.
Right. Well, you know, there was that swath of hair up there at the ranger station that the Bigfoot researcher stayed up in your ranch there for a while, mm-hmm. had actually documented. And I found a research article that talked about the lab results and the analysis of that hair. And indeed, it was basically unnatural and not of this earth, but they couldn't state for a fact that it was from such a potential animal. You know, but the thing about it is, of course, this particular researcher talks about a potential paranormal or psychic connection to Sasquatch, which it seems strange, but in a lot of cases, there are Bigfoot frequented sightings around UFO hotspots, and this is indeed one of them, you know.
Yeah, they're definitely connected. I remember that research, it was silicon-based,
right?
And there are 3 to 4 foot long strands, and they're perfectly hollow. And they had a forensic scientist and a fiber specialist both looking at this hair. And the first thing they said was, what is this, alien?
Right.
You know, they didn't know what it was. They said, where'd this come from? This is not, we can't create this. We can't duplicate this on the earth.
Right, and I think you and I were talking about this one time, and we were discussing, you had mentioned your, one of your theories were that Sasquatch may be working in tandem with the ETs where some bases are located to try and just keep people from, you know, nosing around too much and wandering into the actual entry points of these bases.
Yeah, it's like the big bad dog, the big watchdog.
Yeah, actually, who knows, maybe Sasquatch pilots some of these UFOs. You ever wonder why they wobbled so much?
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, if you were Silicon Base, that would allow you to shift dimensions much easier than being Iron Base like we are. But it's amazing how this, the sighting that I had with this Bigfoot, I was 50 feet away from this Bigfoot, and it did not even make it to the forest, and it vanished. And I was looking dead on at it, and I said, oh, my God. And before I saw it, there was a brilliant white sphere, and I was with other people who saw it, that came flying out of the forest really fast, came right at me, and I was cooking dinner. I picked up this pan to block it. It scared the crap out of me, basically, and to block this thing, because it was coming right at me, and it went around me, around the van, and down a trail. So it was definitely under intelligent guidance, you might say, and it ended up exactly where I encountered the Bigfoot.
Interesting.
And so, I mean, I can only make a suggestion on this one. I can't prove anything, but it seems like they have the ability to turn into a light sphere, like a giant orb or something like that, and appear and reappear, and they do all kinds of things. Because in all of the, when I was reading the documentation, a lot of the people just said it just disappeared.
Right.
It was there, and we were looking right at it, and then it wasn't there, and there's nowhere it could have gone. So in this big research book, there were so many testimonials that this creature just disappeared, you know, and this is an 8 to 10 foot creature, you know, that just vanishes in front of you in an open field, you know, where's it going to hide? It just didn't lay down all of a sudden, you know, in six-inch grass. And
well, it would definitely explain the elusiveness of this creature over the years, you know. It's an interesting, you know, theory that has recently been developed, you know. Recently, they found actual physical evidence up in your area, very, very close to you, and have some really viable footage. This was previewed last year. It was right up in your area, and I'd be interested to try and follow up on it. There's just so much stuff, you know, to try and follow up on and connect the pieces to.
There's a psychologist doing research up here because he had an encounter, and he's trying to get people to believe him because, you know, he went back and everybody laughed at him, you know. So I thought it was funny, though. He was saying that these are just primitive beings like apes, and there's nothing to it as far as all this other activity. But they laid out all these apples and cucumbers because they have a history of loving those, you know, on this table with all these cameras on it. And so they set this trap out to catch Bigfoot. And every time, Bigfoot got in there and got the food.
Wow.
And they found tracks, and you can see where it moved around and did this and that. But there's nothing on the footage. There's nothing on the films. The things didn't trigger, and over again, this thing evaded them.
Right.
So, you know, one of my points was is you know, this thing isn't really that dumb because it outsmarted all your scientists every time.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
You know, so they definitely are very intelligent, and they seem to have they're extremely sensitive, is what I've noticed. That was my own feeling, is that they're very sensitive, very aligned with nature, and part of the, You know, people say they're the height of the nature kingdom, like, you know, watching over what happens there.
Well, who knows? You know, it's very possible that there is a connection between this and the UFO phenomenon, because they do seem to be linked to some extent.
Yeah, I got to tell you one more quick story. I don't want to take over, but there's a kid up here that came to the ranch, and he was white as a ghost, just shaking. And he was up there on the reservation. They're doing some logging right in the area where Bigfoot hangs out. And this Bigfoot picked up this big collar that they run their choke chains through to pull trees up with. and it weighs about 500 pounds at least, and it threw it and hit one of their tractors and just destroyed it.
Really?
And they're throwing 50-gallon drums of diesel full and hitting the top of this cabin, and I mean, it was pretty intense what happened up there, and they shut down the whole operation, and
wow.
And the Native Americans had to spend at least a week or 2 weeks in quiet time and meditation at home to figure out, you know, why they, you know, what the whole story was about. That's part of their
right.
system, you know, and this kid was, I think he was telling the truth because he was just shaking. You could tell he was, when he'd lift his hand up, his hand was still shaking from the experience.
Yeah, I'd be interested to follow up on that. I know that there's a lot of stories that come out of Yakima of ongoing activity where these creatures will actually come into particular ranch areas and help themselves to the garden and stuff, I guess, mutually, you know. But there's never really been anything that has been of a negative nature where they've attacked people or anything like that, you know.
They'll shake your windows if you don't leave food out for them here.
Yeah. Well,
I don't want to go into it, but there's some people I know that live on the outskirts here, and if they don't put food out, these things will come up and shake, bang on their window.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I think it's a real intriguing concept to try and actually capture that undisputable footage of, you know, the Bigfoot, and the opportunity exists up there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, with today's technology that's so hands-on and affordable, it's very probable to achieve it. I mean, I was even, you know, fooling around with the idea of utilizing that recording that NIDS investigated as of a Bigfoot yowl, you know, a howl.
Oh, yeah.
From here, and they analyzed it and concluded it was definitely not anything that we know of as a natural animal. If he were to utilize that down in, let's say, a gully, of course, you'd have to be up on top of a hill or up a tree or somewhere where you're staying and utilize it through a loudspeaker and be ready with a video camera. I'm sure that it might be an intriguing call.
You might end up with Bigfoot as your girlfriend. Disappear off into the forest.
Have to be very careful about that one.
You know, one of the things about that, the way I feel, some of the, that where I had my encounter and where this other activity is going on, it's still going on, and I won't tell people where it is. And the main reason why is you know, they're their own nation. They have their own family and their own tribe or whatever you might call it. And the Native Americans call them the Bigfoot Nation. And
wow.
And they come down and they help them out when they get too far away from nature. The Bigfoot will come down and point to herbs and things that they need to start gathering. And it's a very spiritual experience for them. And I personally, I don't think we need a bunch of people tramping around,
right?
You know, in their backyard because yeah. they don't have much of a backyard left. And
it's very important to preserve.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, if you're spiritually oriented and you want to experience this thing and you go out with the right intent,
right,
you know, you'll experience it. That's what the Native Americans say. They
right.
they said Bigfoot will find you. You won't find Bigfoot, you know, but if you have the right frame of mind and you go out there, Bigfoot will find you. So,
and you know, that's a funny thing because it's kind of like indicative of some of the aspects of benevolent ufology as well. How the UFO phenomenon may manifest around certain people who project positive energy or the desire to make contact, you know. And the benevolent case files that we handle, which we try to focus on that because there's so much negativity within the field, you know, focusing on negative contact,
mm-hmm.
all of them have that kind of message and what creates that contact or contact field, you know, so to speak.
It is. It's that love vibration or divine feminine and joy energy. They're very attracted to that. And they, when they fly over here, they scan the group and they check out the group consciousness, and that determines how low they come in.
Right.
And show themselves. And in the very beginning, we had some small groups, and they're very spiritual people that had a real high degree of integrity and things of that nature. And boy, the ships are just dropping right into the field here.
Right.
And, you know, over the trees, and it was amazing. But as time went on and, you know, we were under heavy surveillance, you might say, you know, they started backing off, and they told me that would happen. You know, we have all the black helicopters here and the black
right.
F-15s and strange cars, you know, sitting
yeah.
on the outskirts of our ranch.
But I'm thinking that it's entirely feasible with the right projection or, you know, projecting of desire to make contact, that, and maybe the right setup out in that field of yours, that it is entirely probable to bring one of these lights down into the field for real-time accounting or live broadcast of, with the sole purpose of awakening human consciousness and demonstrating beyond any reasonable doubt that this phenomenon really exists and is manifesting right here as we speak, with a connection to the message we're putting out. If it was done in a proper fashion, in tandem with what we believe their purpose or modus operandi is, I think that it would totally cooperate, you know.
Exactly. I think that's what needs to happen. There's one thing that I know: if you have pure intent and you're really aligned with the awakening and healing process of humanity, the earth, and you're here, you know, you're service oriented, that's what makes the contact. And if you have a group with that same motive, a tight group together, that collective consciousness really opens the doors for things to happen. The only thing that inhibits it is, you know, there's another group we all know about that when UFOs come in, their whole function is to shoot it down, steal the technology and back engineer it and use it in the war industry.
Right.
And as long as these people are out there that only know aggression to greet these UFOs, they're just going to take the high road and
right.
keep their distance. But luckily, that's changing, because a lot of the people, you know, as you well know, we've had base commanders here, Air Force base commanders. We've had all kinds of people in the services, the military services, that really want to understand this phenomenon and don't want to attack it. And then there's some others that are still under orders to, you know, clear the skies of anything we don't understand.
Right. You know, and I think it's also important to mention that there's an aspect of the phenomenon that is not indicative of hardware or a physical manifestation existing. And what I'm saying here basically is that some percentage of this phenomenon could actually be a spiritual manifestation of some sort of, entities that exist in a life form.
Mm-hmm.
As in some aspects of metaphysics and other contact cases, there's been the mention of what's been referred to as sevens, which is supposed to be a collective group of spiritual beings that unite into a light form to explore and to manifest and explore the universe. And basically, some of the enhancements we've done on some of the video that we've received from your ranch has shown what seems to be like a collective network of beings or something, more so than any kind of physical object in there, you know. So there again, you know, where you just see light and you don't see a physical object, I think that there could be an actual spiritual connection to, discarnate entities, you know, that may exist on a very high level, you know.
Yeah, there might be interdimensional or,
right.
or ultra-dimensional is what they call it.
Exactly, yeah.
Michio Kaku actually talked about that. He's one of the head physicists at, I think, New York State. I'm not sure, but he talked about that, and he said, you know, we're going about it all the wrong ways. He says, with all the other planes and dimensions out there, he said, this should be more of a try to measure these other planes and dimensions if you're going to be looking for intelligent life out there in the universe, because,
right.
you know, it's not just, you know, we're looking, you know, most of the people are looking for nuts and bolts and just physical craft, but, you know, if something came here from that far away, you know, they would have to go far beyond light speed.
Yeah, absolutely, and really, you know, the concept of their capabilities can't be really, constrained to our linear thinking, because it's a fold in space and time, you know. It's
mm-hmm.
like the two corners of a piece of paper brought together, as opposed to traveling across the entire piece of paper, you know.
Yeah, they jump.
I mean,
a lot of these things don't really fly like a craft that we would see. They just appear.
Right.
And then they fly so we can see them, and then they just vanish again. I've seen Air Force jets, or I don't know who's chasing these guys up there, and constantly when a ship appears, within 5 minutes, there's a jet on it. It's amazing. So they must either already be in the air. I don't know what their scramble time is, but from Portland, because they have a lot of, and then over in Yakima, the training center over there. But in 5 minutes, these guys are on it, and it's amazing watching it, because sometimes the ship will just be sitting there, and the jet will vector in on it, be coming straight at it, and it just disappears.
Right.
And the jet goes by and it reappears behind it, you know. And
right.
I've seen them actually fly right into the jet, like right up their tailpipe.
Right.
And turn into a light sphere, like just go right over the jet and then vanish and disappear.
Well, it is very interesting because there's a definite intelligence behind some percentage of this phenomena up there. For instance, the fire lookouts in Yakima and the data that was collected by Greg Long back in time, they had noted that, the construction of one of the fire lookouts, often the distance about 12 miles when the workers would leave at night, all of a sudden here would be three balls of light traveling at a high rate of speed, you know, about maybe 100 feet to 200 feet off the ground, coming along and then going to the construction site and slowly trolling around there to see what was done and then collecting together and taking off into the distance, you know. I mean, obviously, there's an observation thing going on there. And, So, you know, these sorts of characteristics demonstrate a definite intelligence behind the phenomena. But
the tower spotters, the fire tower spotters have all seen the ships, and the tribal police have documented it. We have them on film talking about all the ships they've seen, and the forest rangers and the regular police, and, you know, with the 3,000 witnesses we have up here now astrophysicists, biophysicists, every kind of physicist. We have Air Force design engineers, base commanders. We just had two major aerospace project control managers up here that actually went on the Art Bell show and testified about their experience with the ships. And it was, you were on the show too.
Right.
And it was undeniable.
Really good testimony there.
It changed their lives. They said it took them 5 or 6 days just to settle down and regroup. Because it just turned them upside down.
You know, I might mention to your audience, back in time when I first met with you, I kind of put the pedal to the metal there trying to document the reality of what was going on up there, because I guess there were certain parties that were trying to debunk your case file, and that's when we found the prior scientific research, the prior flap of activity that was well documented and how it interrelated to your experience, too. That's all documented with links and everything on the Beckoning Contact article, which they can access in the hot link section on our front page, and I think from your site, too. And it's got all the links to Dr. Acker's research back then, and all that stuff is all tied together in the Beckoning Contact article.
Even with Kenneth Arnold, he lost sight of the ships when they descended on the western slopes of Mount Adams, which is basically my front yard, you know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
it's an incredible area. The only thing that's not incredible about it is during the winter. It's like it's like being in a freezer up there, man. I don't know how you deal with it, man, but you've really handled it over the years.
You know, we've got a lot of footage in January. One of the landings, I think, was in January, and then, and I was standing out in about 5 feet of snow, filming these things. But,
They were speculating that the only reason that there would be a lack of data during the winter months would be primarily because people wouldn't be outside observing, which is how the data was collected. But setting up monitoring stations that are, you know, environmentally controlled in an enclosure like we were talking about doing would be very interesting to just see how much the phenomenon might show itself when clear weather would permit it to show itself in the real endurance.
You know, we had people that on the field next to ours that moved the irrigation lines, and some of the workers there, and they said they would see things dropping down and bouncing up and down in that field, and just they would big light ships and sit there, and then they would drive up and they would see it and it would take off, and they would turn around and drive the other way. They'd get the heck out of there. I was talking to them and said it scared the hell out of them is what they said.
Well,
and they just got the heck out of there.
That's
but if we did have a webcam or something going of that nature, we'd be able to pick up a lot of these things.
Absolutely. There's no
doubt. You know what I find amazing is, you know, we have these groups. We should get into this. You know, I hate to mention any names, but, you know, NASA has their own elite investigative team that checks out all these places. And they've checked us out, and they know it's for real here. And we've had NIDS up here. You've investigated. All these top investigators have been up here. You know, we haven't heard a thing from SETI because we know what that's all about. But, you know, NASA and SETI are under government constraints. Everything has to go through NSA concerning UFOs because it's classified, and they decide what we hear about and what we don't hear about.
Right.
But, you know, the bottom line is there is more activity here. There is more documentation here. I put it out there, the NASA SETI challenge, and I said, okay, you lay your evidence on the table, and I'll lay my evidence on the table, and whoever has the best evidence, and we'll get an unbiased panel, you know, to judge who has the best evidence, and whoever walks away, you know, has the best evidence, walks away with the funding.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know, gets the big prize or whatever.
Yeah.
And also, too, is that all the evidence laid on the table is public domain.
Right. Right,
you know,
exactly.
And so, of course, you know, you didn't hear a word about, you know, about this, but, you know, we sent it out over all the emails and everything. And it's sad to have this much activity, this much documentation, thousands of eyewitnesses. And, you know, the funding isn't there, even for a bloody little webcam, you know.
Well, you know, I think this is all going to change, though, James, because I think everything's in its own perfect order, we'll find, in its own way, because what's going to happen is, you know, we're heading down this path, and it's really beginning to manifest, where we'll actually form this remote monitoring station. We'll do live broadcast recording, monitoring on a 24/7 basis, and firmly document this phenomenon where it's indisputable and can't be denied or looked at as just a past tense event. And as this occurs, I think hopefully we'll be able to seek and obtain private funding from people who, there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of money and, you know, they would love to do something that could really change the world with their money. And the funding will be there then because, you know, up to this point, it's just been difficult to really get a grasp on the phenomenon as something more than just a past recorded one-time event. Many times, albeit, but with, you know, where we're headed, we're going to have real lifetime recording and broadcast of this, you know, and that'll be the ticket.
Yeah, that's the way it needs to go. You know, people go, well, what's the point? You know, how is this going to help out humanity? And, you know, you think about it. These beings are traveling, you know, across vast distance. They're interstellar. They're interdimensional. They have technologies beyond our wildest dreams. There's
right.
been so many accounts of people being healed by them.
Right.
And, you know, they have the cure for any disease we have, you know, and they have the fuel of energy technologies.
Yep.
They have everything we need to turn this planet around. The only thing missing is the human element,
the
people with integrity
right.
that really want to anchor this in and get it going and make it happen.
Right.
You know, and it's the same.
And I think, you know, and again, I think it's because I think humanity in its the core of its heart really has the intention of doing right by that, but they have not been allowed to really know for a fact that there's truth with this. And I think that's where you're really going to be key in coming in to establish that, you know.
Exactly. I mean, it's on the ground right now, you know, with the technology. Some of it's coming out, you know, with the crystallized oxygen, Aquarius water, that's a great one. And then there's a lot of other ones coming out. But, you know, almost all your pathogens are anaerobic.
Right.
And even the cancer cells anaerobic. And, you know, if you raise the body pH and increase the blood oxygen, a lot of those problems go away. But there's so many technologies out there. This was around since, I think, 1927. A double Nobel Prize, Otto Warburg, was the one that came up with this research. And you think about it, you know, that's 1927. Well, that's almost 80 years
right.
ago we had the cure for cancer and most of these diseases. And there's other technologies, frequency-generating technologies and things of that nature. But, I mean, this is on the ground right now. This is in the labs of certain physicists, and I know who they are. The cures are there, too. All of this has already been disseminated, and it's on the ground, and the only thing it's waiting for is the leadership
right.
and the people with a little bit of funding and muscle to get it out there. And
right. I think the other potential source for mainstream will be plasma physics, because the potential to move and develop new sources of plasma science for it is really incredible up there.
Well, you know, they have a spark plug, and have you heard of that? I can't think of the name of it, but it creates a plasma field, and it increases your gas mileage something ridiculous amount. I mean, you get like 80 miles a gallon.
Ooh.
And it's over in Europe, and they have it over in Europe, and the guy developed it, but he can't get anybody to make it here in the States.
Wow, wow.
You know, nobody will touch it. They're all afraid to touch this thing because it, like, doubles your gas mileage, and it also, it burns everything. So you don't, where we burn something like 30, I don't know what we burn. I think I can't remember what the amount of fuel that we actually burn, and the rest just goes out the tailpipe.
Right.
But this would actually clean things up. You know, you can actually split water and run your car, you know, burn the hydrogen, and those technologies are here too. But it's just a matter of the people waking up to these technologies and demanding, you know, to bring them forward and deciding that cleaning up the environment.
And probably the most important thing, I think, is benevolent advanced intelligences will not allow any of these technologies to come out unless, as a collective, we can wake up and begin to realize, as a first, you know, beginning point, the reality of our spiritual connection and existence, and take responsibility for what we're doing in the world and become one with each other in the earth before
exactly.
we can take these technologies and move forward with them in a beneficial manner, you know.
Yeah, we had quite a few people here once, and they brought in some strange technology on the backside of the mountain, and a lot of witnesses were here, and they actually fired these pulse lasers and some kind of a plasma weapon at this huge golden ship that came over. And I have the footage of it, actually, and it got a little brighter is all it did, and then it just kept going, you know, took the high road, kept going on its course, and, you know, just kind of said, well, silly humans, you know.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Primitives aren't ready yet. You know, we'll come back again later. And people go, well, why don't they land on the White House lawn or hover over the Super Bowl? You know, that's your answer.
Exactly.
You know, basically, until we stop acting like primitives
right.
and rise to the connect to the, you know, raise our consciousness and start living a more spiritual, wholesome way of life in harmony with each other and the planet. They can't afford to come here. We're just too primitive and too aggressive.
Which is extremely interesting because that was your original draw to the area to form the Earth Self-Mastery Institute, is it?
Yeah, Self-Mastery Earth Institute.
Yeah, and which its primary purpose was exactly that.
Exactly. I mean, that's what we rose to the occasion. We created the space to have the contact, and that's how it came. And if you come with a real arrogant attitude, like, prove it to me, and I don't care how many PhDs you have, you know, they're just going to leave you in your own ignorance, and you're not going to see them.
Right.
And it's up to them. It's not up to, we can demand all we want, you know, it's totally up to them as to what the experience, you know, how the experience unfolds and how close it is and,
right.
and you know, things of that nature.
Well, that's in one of the other major contactee cases in the world. That's exactly what they have to say also. That's what you said.
Is that the one? Now, you're doing some investigation in Peru as far as, I believe it was the Rama?
Yeah, there's a group called Rama that is involved in real-time contacts down there.
Mm-hmm.
And this group of ETs, which is referred to, for lack of better terminology, as a federation, actually has done demonstration flyovers for the media down there that was recorded by the news broadcasting agencies down there, which we have footage of, and they're willing to do it again in the future. But there seems to be a connection to your whole deal up there because that's how we managed to hook up with some of the main contactees in that case down there. So
yeah, it's amazing because
yeah.
we're all working together.
Right.
The it's funny because these other countries like Peru and Brazil and I'm trying to think of who else, Mexico, you know, they're not up there firing on these ships. They're not chasing around and trying to blow them out of the sky and not greeting them aggressively. So, you know, these ships are flying all over the place down there.
Yeah, it is strange. There is a collection of other countries who will, their government is more user-friendly to the population about the reality of this ET enigma. And UFO enigma that truly does exist. Well, here in the United States, land of the free press and free information, we remain in ignorance. And that's only because of plausible deniability and our drive to make a living and, you know, have materialism. But that could change, and I think it will change, you know, once people become aware.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to remember his name. I'm sure you know it. Is it Heller? With the Canadian former defense minister?
Oh, recently, yeah.
Was it Paul Heller? Or,
yes, yes.
I think that's his name. And he
yeah.
was, he just flat out said, you know, I've seen all the evidence, I've looked at everything, and I know that they're here. And he was very worried about America and the way they've been covering everything up and actually firing on these ships. And he said that you're going to put us into a world war with some beings that are so far beyond our technology that it's, you know, in the interest of national security, said this is nuts.
Well, I think there's only one way to solve that, James, and that's by forming a global coalition of partners who would like to share this information as one joint thing, where it will exist on servers throughout the world and cannot be controlled or taken by anyone.
30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is happening. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty undeniable. Looks like we've got 30 seconds left, so we're going to have to wrap things up here. And, again, I want to thank you, Steve, for coming on and all the great work you're doing with PSI applications and documenting all this evidence.
And I look forward to helping you all I can into the future.
And looking forward to getting those webcams up and getting some big donations to get all that equipment up and then sharing it with the people on the ongoing UFO activity.
Thank you, James.
This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in, and see us next week, same time, same station, same channel. Take care and be well.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.